Sheridan resident Val Burgess has put a lot of miles on her car, speaking to schools and others about the experiences of World War II vets and prisoners of war. Burgess is finishing up another round of talks next month. Her talks have helped students learn about those who served in the war. She explains how she became an oral historian.
My uncle was at my grandmother's funeral and wanted to go back to his prison camp he'd been held in during the war. He kept talking about it, and I finally said, well, what are you talking about? And he said, well, I want to go back, but I don't have anybody to do the marketing materials, because he wanted to take a large group back. I offered to do that for very selfish reasons. I simply wanted to go back to Europe. And then we sent out 3,000 letters, and these human beings started calling me and telling me amazing stories. And I asked my uncle, has anybody ever recorded them? And he said, no, I don't think so. And so I started my first oral history in the summer of 1994. And I just kept going. I interviewed, we had 125 POWs and 200 members of their family. And we traveled 17 days in Europe. And we literally saw those countries through their eyes. And I really felt like I'd never done anything. And so I started down this path doing the oral histories. And there were times my husband and I would say, we got to quit spending all this money on this. You've got to quit traveling so much. Okay, we'll quit. And ultimately, we sat down and we decided that would we regret it when we were older that we did not do the work, or would we be grateful for having done the oral histories and collected this history? And it was, you know, that's a no-brainer. It was do the work. So here we are 23 years later, and it's still going.
What did you feel that you learned that maybe surprised you or you didn't anticipate?
I think it's the things that they appreciated and the fact that they had no fears. So the things that they appreciated were the simple things in life. One man sent me a novel he finished when he was 84. His name was David Westheimer, who wrote 20 novels in his lifetime. He wrote the screenplay for The Days of Wine and Roses. He wrote Von Ryan's Express and all these other books. But he talks about in his last novel, and it's a compilation of a number of POWs. This POW escapes from a prison camp, and he ends up with some GIs. He's not supposed to escape because the war is still going on, but he ends up with these GIs, and they say, God, you smell so bad. You know, you want to get a uniform, we'll take you. So they arrange for him to be able to purchase a uniform. He's got his ID from prison camp, and he writes a check on a piece of paper, and they let him buy a uniform. But the man who sold it to him said, you know, you smell so bad. You got fleas and lice all over. You need to take a shower. So he hands him a towel and a bar of soap. And the man smells, and the POW smells the bar of soap and gets an erection. It's been 2.5 years since he smelled anything that good. And the towel against his face was just, he hadn't felt that in a long, long time. When he was going into the shower, he put his feet on carpet and he took his shower and he got cleaned up. But he could still rub all the dirt off. And he looked over at his sweater that his mother had knitted him that was lying on the floor with his filthy clothes. And he wanted to take it with him, but it smelled so bad he just had to leave it. And he hoped that she would give him another someday. He went to a gas house with some GIs, and he had his hand on a table, and a German woman came over and touched it. And he realized it had been 2.5 years since a woman had touched his hand. But these men came back, and because they understood that fine line between life and death, they had no fear. They would apply for jobs. I mean, we had the largest per capita, probably, of people in post-secondary education in the history of our country. I mean, we built interstate highways. We brought lots of technology back to the United States. I've interviewed a man who worked with all the 128 rocket scientists who came back from who immigrated from Germany and built NASA. He worked with them. I've interviewed a man who wrote the legislation for us to have seatbelts in our car. They just knew that they were alive, they were happy to be alive, and wanted to build our country and make it a place that they were proud of, and they did.
One of the interesting things you hear is there sometimes appears to be some criticism directed towards our current veterans, because you'll hear people say, well, these guys seem to have PTSD and problems where back then they didn't. What's been your experience?
Well, most of them, the prisoners of the Japanese, it's a wonder they were normal or even semi-normal. I've spent a lot of time with a group called the 5th Air Base, and you can touch them on the shoulder and they'll break into tears and they have to compose themselves. When they tell stories to me, many times they'll get to a place and they just have to stop, because they're so emotional. They can't believe they could be treated in the way that they were by the Japanese. It was so hard on them. And then to come home, I wish my only regret with this work is that I did not interview the wives, because the wives kept these men. You know, they were that post that held them together. One day I was with a POW who was in the European theater, and I said, well, do you know about PTSD? And he says, hell, I've got PTSD. Yeah, I've got night terrors. And, you know, they went about it in different ways. Well, alcohol was certainly something that, you know, our government, when they came back from flights, gave them alcohol every time, whether it was rye or whiskey, whatever. So they learned to like alcohol. And I don't know if some of them, I mean, I think a lot of them self-medicated. Some of them didn't, but a number of the POWs wanted to work in the Postal Service because it was steady, regular. They knew what they could count on, and they didn't have to be fearful, because they came home really different people. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of children of these veterans, and I say, you've never known the man before the war. And they go, oh, I never thought of that, because every one of them is changed by war. And so our soldiers coming home today, they have seen the unseeable. You know, we don't understand what they have, the stress or the fear. And numerous men that I've interviewed, Glenn Robinson from Casper, Wyoming, who was a Bataan death marcher, he said that there were three things. He forgave immediately, and he was a Christian, so he believed in Jesus. So when he got to Tokyo from Niigata, he forgave the Japanese completely. He was never going to open that, you know, turn that page back. He was going to walk away from all that he felt and forgive. And then he believed in Jesus Christ, and he said, and I told my story, not all the gory details, but I told my story. And it's so important to be comfortable with your story, because it is what happened to you. And some of them are just unbelievable stories. You go, God, that couldn't happen, but it did.
What do they say about war today?
Well, a lot of them have said, we need to find a better way.
Mel Burgess is traveling the state of Wyoming these days. These public and school programs are supported in part by a grant from the Wyoming Cultural Trust Fund, a program of the Department of State Parks and Cultural Resources. And I know, Val, as months go on, you're always willing and probably able to go and talk to a number of groups. Hopefully this continues. I know you value these conversations, and the school children you've had a chance to speak with in particular are learning a lot. It's our pleasure having you on our program, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Take care.